From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe. Surprisingly, not a pharmacy, even though you can't spell disappointment without ointment. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here today hoping that that wordplay somehow intersects with the topic of this episode that Chelsea has selected and withheld from me. I like to think I made a good guess.
No, that was incredible. And I was shocked at first. I was like, we're not a pharmacy, but here we are. I was like, right, we're not a pharmacy.
We have to change some of our business plans, but technically correct. Technically. Only in the legal sense.
Right. Yes. Okay. I got a fun one for you today. And today, I'm talking about a topic that I think you probably won't expect. For today, anyway. Maybe you were expecting it in general, and I could totally be wrong on that.
Chelsea,
maybe you were.
Is it Banana Republics?
Could you imagine the coincidence? It's like listening to Journey to the Fringe driving through electronic fog. It's not zero.
It is not 0%. Yes.
We're going to talk today about broadcast interruptions. Hijacks or takeovers, whatever tickles your fancy. Today I'm covering mysterious broadcast interruptions, and I must have you know, most importantly, I will not be covering any hacks of TV stations in which pornography was played over whatever broadcast was appearing on at the time, which was at least 50% of which was children's cartoons. And actually happened in reverse, at least once in which pornography was interrupted by religious script. We live in a weird world.
That just proves God even more, I assume.
Oh yeah.
What was his name? Was it The Exorcist? Did he find time in his like 60,000 exorcisms to actually,
you know, what?
Just splice in some scripture?
He just didn't make a prominent enough impact on my life, like Friar Bernardi. And I'll never forget Friar Bernardi.
Friar Bernardi is like a household name between our households. That's all I know for sure.
I can't even remember the Exorcist guy, but Friar Bernardi, I can recall it like that. I'm not even looking at notes for this. I just know Friar Bernardi. The other guy, he was the exorcist that performed
just
like
some
10 exorcisms a day.
Yet prolific exorcist.
Yeah, so prolific that he was doing it over like telephone calls and Skype. Wait, hold on. Landlines?
I mean, it really depends on if he was on dial-up or not. If he's on dial-up, yes, landlines. If not, just wirelessly.
But Skype,
wireless.
Skype was like, okay. And like, what if somebody called and he was on dial-up? And he got disconnected. It was so sad.
The 90s were an interesting time for online exorcisms. I remember phone calls interrupting my WoW raids in the early 2000s, and this exorcist, I'm just picturing him saying, like, does my wife really need this call? This person's got a demon in him. I gotta finish this up. It's only 10 seconds. Maybe I can beat it out.
Louise!
But, like, in hard Latin. He's thinking that in hard Latin.
Not again! Okay, the type of interruptions I'm covering today actually accounted for a majority, not the pornography or the religious scripts, which is actually quite a bit, and I deem at least rather boring.
Now, Chelsea, I do have to assume Max Headroom comes up.
You know, that was my next sentence. What broadcast do you think that we're going to talk about today?
Max Headroom.
Yeah, any other ones?
Mind? You know what? When I think of these, they kind of get interspersed with like weird radio signals. So I don't know for sure. And predominantly the pornography ones. Just kidding.
Okay. First one is the Southern Television Broadcast Interruption. And let me set the scene for you. A little after 5 p.m. on Saturday, the 26th of November, 1977. The transmission of the local UK station Southern Television News Bulletin made worldwide headlines when it was overridden by an external broadcast from an individual claiming to be Vrillon of the Ashtar Galactic Command. Have you heard of this before?
It does not ring a bell.
Really? Okay, love that. So as newscaster Andrew Gardner recited the day's events in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, the scheduled bulletin began to break up and an eerie broadcast took over in its stead.
You should also know that Rhodesia was very white. It was kind of supposed to be like a white haven in Africa for a long time.
Okay, that is really weird. Why?
Yeah, it is. White supremacists point to Rhodesia as how white people are inherently good. It's like a very inherently white supremacist area.
There's another episode I think we need to do. There's a lot of weird, like, white supremacist stuff in Africa.
Yeah, but that also has to do with colonialism.
Okay. Because wasn't
And also, we did kind of cover it with the Rwanda genocide.
I was just going to say, There's something with the Rwanda genocide.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just move on to mysterious broadcast. The scheduled bulletin began to break up and an eerie broadcast. Oh yeah, I always said this because I didn't know what STED meant. The Independent Broadcasting Authority, the IBA, engineers based in Croydon, Surrey, had no idea that their regularly scheduled news bulletin had been hacked by an outside source. This rogue signal was also oblivious to the main transmitter located in Southampton. The only people that were aware of something bizarre taking place were the viewers themselves. Some panicked, while others were unmoved. The video feed remained intact, but the audio was suppressed by a spokesman identifying himself as Vrillin. I have the link. This link is a reenactment. We're going to take a look at it now. This is, like I said, it's a reenactment. There's no actual real happening of this taking, like, in record. So it's a reenactment. This isn't even the same newscaster that this actually happens to. So just to let you know that, and I'm going to send it to Taylor right now. You take a look. We're only going to take a look at, it's only 6 minutes or something like that. Can you hear volume if I share it?
I assume, because you hear mine.
...settlement based on one man, one vote. But, he says, there are conditions. These include stopping the execution of all captured prisoners of war, allowing you to stay in negotiations, being arrested. In Australia, Mr. Kerry Packer's cricketers are still pleading to buy yesterday's High Court decision, which dips the ban on them playing in test matches.
This is the voice of Umar, representative of the Ashtar Galactic Commander, speaking to you. For many years, you have seen us as knights and sailors. We speak to you now to say the same as we have done to your brothers and sisters all over this, your planet Earth. We come to warn you of the destiny of your race and your world so that you may communicate to your fellow beings the course you must take to avoid the disaster which threatens your world and the beings on other worlds around you. This is an order that you may share and
I find this interesting because you would have no way of knowing that this was not broadcast like simultaneously everywhere on the world.
So true though.
Because that's what they're saying.
I'm torn on this one.
So I take it the words didn't show up.
No. As I said, this is a reenactment, so this isn't actually the guy's voice, which I'm so interested to hear, to know how the guy's voice showed up.
Yeah.
All your weapons of evil must be removed. The time for conflict is now past, and the race of which you are a part may proceed to the higher stages of its evolution if you show yourselves worthy to do this. You have but a short time to learn to live together in peace and goodwill. Small groups all over the planet are learning this, and exist to pass on the light of the dawning new age to you all. You are free to accept the
rejection of your teachings, because we are as many go as wide as this. Then they run out.
Respect for evolution. Here now, the voice of Vrillin, representative of the Ashtar Galactic Command, speaking to you. Be aware also that there are many false prophets and guides at present operating on your world. They will suck your energy from you, the energy you call money, and will put it to evil ends, giving you worthless costs in return. and your divine self will protect you from this. You must be utterly sensitive.
It is unfortunate that this is a remake, because I'd really like to know what it looked like when it was originally played. And how understandable it was, because this isn't that understandable.
What?
Like, they're putting words on the screen so that you can read what they're saying. Without the words, I don't know if you'd be able to clearly understand what they're saying.
I can't hear what's being said right now, to be honest with you.
Ah, fair enough.
And I'm assuming that... And I listened to it before I sent it to you, but I don't recall how understandable it was. But I'm assuming...
They tried to recreate
it. Very understandable from the first one, because they have this transcript. And there's no other way they would have had the transcript. That, how would they have the transcript, actually?
Yeah, because nobody recorded it.
There's no actual recording of it. Okay, well, this question never came up while I was writing that. It's funny how discussing with another person will do that. I mean, this doesn't change the fact that it was a real thing that happened.
Oh, and it went into cartoons.
Okay, well, this was just all a very nice effect. Okay. So, the IBA, which we found out what that meant earlier, moved quickly to dispel fears and concerns among their viewership, declaring that the broadcast was a hoax. A technically gifted one, but a hoax nonetheless. Whoever or whatever was responsible for the broadcast interruption would almost certainly have excellent and in-depth knowledge of broadcasting capabilities and frequencies in order to pull off the interruption. The Huntingdon transmitter, where the Southern TV signal was normally broadcast from, was actually a unique example that could explain why Southern TV became victim here. The Huntingdon signal actually originated in the Roebridge transmitter on the Isle of Wight, rather than being fed directly by a landline. Overriding this FM signal was quite an easy thing for the right person to accomplish. With the proper equipment, all the hacker needed to do was broadcast the rogue signal on the same frequency as the authentic signal, but almost on top of the Huntingdon transmitter itself.
I'm sorry, did you say that was an FM signal?
Well, this is the 70s. Yep, I did say that.
I didn't realize TV was done over FM.
Vrillin had to be in the immediate vicinity of the remote Huntingdon transmitter at 5.10 p.m. on that very day, whatever it was that took over the airwaves. Pulling this off required a lot more than mere capability. Time and quite a bit of it was also necessary. If this was, as the IBA contests, a hoax, then it was a magnificent effort on the part of the hoaxer. It's almost unfortunate that nobody knows precisely who that was.
Yeah, and you'd think it would be pretty easy to know, because they had to be so close to the radio signal to actually pull it off.
Yeah, obviously I just said spoiler alert, nobody to this day knows who it was. So I guess it could have been Vrillin, but here's the official explanation of what happened. At the time, the Hannington television transmitter was unusual in being one of the few main transmitters which rebroadcasted an off-air signal received from another transmitter, like I just said. It's just open to this kind of signal intrusion, and even a relatively low-powered transmission very close to the rebroadcast receiver could overwhelm its reception of the intended signal, resulting in the unauthorized transmission being amplified and rebroadcast across a far wider area. The IBA stated that to carry out such a hoax would take a considerable amount of technical know-how, and a spokesman for the Southern Television confirmed a hoaxer jammed our transmitter in the wilds of North Hampshire by taking another transmitter very close to it.
And they didn't just blame the blacks. Okay.
Nope. So that's that site. Nobody knows what actually happened, who it was, but this one actually doesn't have, like some of the other ones we have
pleasant explanation, yeah.
Who did it?
And even then, we can't just discount aliens because we could have done it. They could have cheap, shitty technology as well.
Well, exactly.
In fact, they could have more access to cheap, shitty technology to do this.
Exactly. And that's how they're traveling between
worlds. It's on diesel. That they siphoned from the last planet.
Okay, the next one, Max Headroom. This one occurred on the 22nd of November, 1987 in Chicago, Illinois. And on this occasion, the broadcasts of two stations were taken over by someone resembling then-current TV star Max Headroom, who I am not familiar with at all.
I've seen The Mask, so...
I've seen The Mask, too, but I still don't know who the fuck
it is. It's The Mask.
Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
The first incident took place during the sports segment of independent TV station WGN-TV's 9 p.m. newscast. Home viewer screens went black for about 15 seconds before footage of a person wearing a Max Headroom mask and sunglasses is displayed. Individual rocks erratically in front of a rotating corrugated metal panel that mimicked the real Max Headroom's geometric background effect, accompanied by a staticky and garbled buzzing sound. The entire intrusion lasted for about 20 seconds and was cut off when engineers at WGN changed the frequency of the signal, linking the broadcast studio to the station's transmitter atop the John Hancock Center. Upon returning to the airways, WGN Sports anchor Dan Rohn commented, quote,
"Well, if you're wondering what's happened, so am I. Actually, the computer that we have running our news from time to time took off and went wild. So what we're going to do is start over from the top with the Bears and tell you once again about the 30-10 victory they had over Detroit today out at Soldier Field."
So that's the first one. It's creepy.
It is. But it doesn't have like an ulterior message like the prior one.
Like the Rillin one?
Yeah.
And then there's a second incident, and that occurred 2 hours later at 11:20 p.m. They had to recollect themselves, reconvene. And during PBS member stations WTTW's broadcast of the Doctor Who serial, Horrifying Rock, culprit was the same Max Headroom impersonator, this time speaking with distorted audio. The masked figure made a comment about nerds, called WGN sportscaster Chuck Swirsky a frickin' liberal, held up a can of Pepsi while saying "Catch the Wave," which was a slogan from the ad campaign for Coca-Cola featuring the Max Headroom character, and held up a middle finger inside what appeared to be a hollowed out dildo. The figure then ran through, don't worry, we'll watch it. The figure then ran through a series of quick comments and song snippets interspersed with excited noises and exclamations. Max sang the phrase, "Your love is fading," hummed part of the theme song to the 1959 animated series Clutch Cargo, and said, "I still see the X," which was a reference to the last episode of that show, which is sometimes misheard as "I stole CBS." He also feigned defecation, complaining of his piles, and explained that he had made a giant masterpiece for all the greatest world newspaper nerds, which is WGN's call letters stand for World's Greatest Newspaper, and discussed sharing a pair of dirty gloves with his brother. After a crude video edit, the person had moved mostly off-screen to the left with his partially exposed buttocks visible from the side, don't worry, we'll watch it, with a female figure wearing a French maid costume and what appears to be a mask appearing on the right edge of the frame. The unworn Max Headroom mask was briefly held in view while the voice cried out, "Oh no, they're coming to get me! Ah, make it stop!" And the female figure began spanking Max with a fly swatter. The image faded briefly into static, and then viewers were returned to the Doctor Who broadcast after a total interruption for about 90 seconds. Technicians at WTTW studio could not counteract the signal takeover because there were no engineers on duty at that hour at the Sears Tower, now known as the Willis Tower, where the station's broadcast tower was located. According to station spokesman Anders Jokom, technicians monitoring the transmissions from the WTTW headquarters attempted to take corrective measures but couldn't. Director Paul Rizzo recalled that as the content got weirder, we got increasingly stressed out about our inability to do anything about it. The pirate broadcast ended when the hijackers unilaterally ended their transmission. By the time our people began looking into what was going on, it was over, said Yocom. WTTW received numerous phone calls from viewers who wondered what had occurred. Excuse me, radio station, what the fuck just happened? And now, obviously, we're going to watch it. I watch it with the volume, of course.
I'll get you a hot drink, miss.
I wonder how long this guy planned this. Like, every single thing he was saying.
Yeah. I thought they figured out who this was. I can't remember it. It's been a long time since I looked.
Well, we're gonna find out.
Okay. The spanking.
With the exposed buttocks.
Yeah. Huh. She's fairly emotionless in that, though. Good for her.
As far as I can tell, a massive electric shock, he died instantly.
Stop. That's where it ends. Okay.
That's ended. It's ended now. I always love a good share during an episode. Broadcast intrusion was achieved by sending a more powerful microwave transmission to the station's broadcast towers than the stations were sending themselves, triggering a capture effect. Okay, so maybe that's more technical than the FM wave? I don't know how to
you think so.
That
yeah.
Rallon was using.
I have to assume microwaves are just stronger than FM radio waves.
Probably. We don't know, though. We're not...
They probably made way more superheroes, in my mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. This was a difficult task in 1987, but was possible before American television stations switched from analog to digital signals in 2009. That's a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah.
Experts have said that...
And also, Chelsea, can we just take a moment to think about how shitty the superheroes would be who were formed by FM radio waves?
Like, they could only, like, vaguely do something, like...
I can read your mind, but only kind of, in a general sense.
I can only kind of go invisible. Or I only kind of get an idea of what you're thinking every man.
I can read your mind, in a general sense. You're kind of hungry, right? I knew it. But you also might not be. You don't know for sure.
Experts have said that the stunt required extensive technical expertise and a significant amount of transmitting power, and that the pirate broadcast likely originated from somewhere in the line of sight of both stations' broadcast towers, which were atop two tall buildings in downtown Chicago. I mean, that's probably not hard. No one has ever claimed responsibility for the stunt. Speculation about the identities of Max and his co-conspirators had centered on the theories that the prank was either an inside job by a disgruntled employee or former employee of WGN, or was carried out by members of Chicago's underground hacker community. However, despite an official law enforcement investigation in the immediate aftermath of the incident and many unofficial investigations, inquiries, and online speculation in the ensuing decades, the identities and motives of the hijacker remain a mystery. Soon after the intrusion, an FCC official was quoted in the news, reported that the perpetrators faced a maximum fine of $10,000 and up to a year in prison. However, the five-year statute of limitations was surpassed in 1992, so the persons responsible for the intrusion would no longer face criminal punishment should their identities be revealed. That's where it ends. Nobody knows about that one either.
Okay.
Max Headroom.
And they faced no repercussion for coming forward, so...
I guess at this point, so why not just be like, hey...
Well, it was 37 years ago. They might be dead.
Oh, no.
Or in their 60s.
I don't like to think...
Which is even worse.
A year that I've been alive as that long ago. I have some surprising ones for you coming up.
Okay.
First, the short and sweet hijacking, which I just couldn't not include, but it's not very long. This one is the 2013 EAS hijackings. On February 11, 2013, Great Falls, Montana, CBS affiliate KRTV, I hate the names of these radio stations, had their emergency alert system hijacked with an audible message warning viewers that the bodies of the dead are rising from their graves and attacking the living. I love this, and if I was watching TV while this happened, there would be a brief moment where I would literally be like, oh fuck, it's happening. All the horror movies that I watched are coming true. And then I probably might realize it was hijacking. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what I do. Later the same night in Marquette, Michigan, and the early morning hours in La Crosse, Wisconsin, the same type of hijacking and reference to a zombie invasion was made over the EAS system of CBS affiliate WKBT-DT, ABC affiliate WBUP, oh, for fuck's sakes, and PBS member station, oh my god, WNMU, during primetime programming. Shortly afterward, PBS, oh, for fuck's sakes, they just keep throwing out all these letters, of Port Dallas, New Mexico, was struck with a similar hacking incident, repeating similar information regarding zombies. However, this led to the arrest of the hacker of the four television stations. So here, I don't know who it is, but they actually got found out. Found them. I don't know what I'd do if a zombie thing came up on the TV. What would you do? Would you think it was weird? Like, real?
Yeah, I would think it was a hoax.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'd have a split second. Maybe I can't tell you. I don't know. Maybe now reading that, especially, I might think it's a hoax.
Yeah, after doing this episode,
yeah,
I would think
this
it's
episode.
A hoax.
So maybe it's a good thing that I'm not, like, boarding up my windows and stuff, being like, we prepared for this. I don't know. You shouldn't mess around with things like that, though. There's people that watch horror movies that are terrified of zombie attacks, and maybe they
yeah, and also,
for that.
To be fair, that the horror movies always start with people who are not prepared for the horror events, so
no,
maybe take it a little seriously.
And I feel like the first signs wouldn't be a public broadcast on TV saying, watch over the zombie attack.
See, I think it's on Reddit before it gets on TV.
Oh, it's for sure on Reddit. That's where the people go. Okay, are you ready for the next one? This is the last.
No, not at all. We should end here because I am not ready.
We could. See you next time. Thank you. For
okay, I'm ready now. Never mind. I'm ready.
Okay, the show must go on then. We're back. Ready? Okay. 2002 Falun Gong hijackings. You know about this?
I do not know.
I'm going to say no, or else you would have said it at the beginning. He's so shocked he can't even talk. February 16, 2002. All those freaking great TV stations, just like letters, just like messed up my speech now. I'll never be the same.
Can't speak in words anymore, just
no,
letters.
I can't do
it. WHAT? Question mark?
Television signals in the Chinese city of Anshan. I'm 100% sure I'm saying that right because it's written in English words. Were briefly hijacked by members of the Falun Gong religious movement in order to clarify the events of the Tiananmen Square self-immolation incident in the previous year.
Yes, which also should not be confused with the Tiananmen Square incident.
Okay.
This is a separate thing from what occurred in the 80s.
I'm actually really glad that you're saying that because I thought it was that incident.
No, this came up in our Falun Gong episode where a Falun Gong person self-immolated in Tiananmen Square in protest of their treatment. And then Falun Gong said that wasn't us because people can't commit suicide in our cult.
Yeah, glad you said that. Glad we're referencing a previous episode we talked about. So you can go back and find out about it and listen to all five parts. On March 5th, 2002, further intrusions took place on cable television channels in the cities of Changchun and Songyuan, protesting persecution of the Chinese government. Different sources vary as to the length of the intrusion, so we're not actually going to be watching a video here, unfortunately.
Also, it would be in Chinese. So,
I mean,
it wouldn't be that helpful.
We could still watch it.
We could.
It doesn't stop us from watching it. It just stops us from understanding it.
Having anything from it, yeah.
Well, some of us.
Could we even...
being
Could
me.
We even really tell if there was a takeover of the radio waves?
You bring up a good point. Nonetheless, it's moot because we don't even have it to watch. So, I wonder why I don't have that. Anyhow, Chinese government. Did I read that yet? Protesting. Persecution by the Chinese government. Different sources vary. Oh yeah, I definitely read this. With figures citing included 10 minutes, 50 minutes, or even as long as 4 hours. In September of the same year, 15 people were convicted of roles in the incident and were given prison terms of up to 20 years. On September 9th, Falun Gong followers again disrupted broadcasting, this time targeting nationwide satellite broadcasting. By 2010, several of those involved had reportedly died in prison. So I'm going to read to you an article from CNN titled Jail for Falun Gong TV Hackers, September 20th, 2002. There's tons of articles on this. I decided to go with the follow-up on the actual persecution of the people who did this to read that article versus one of it actually happening because it gives us an idea of all of it. So yeah, CNN.com, Hong Kong, China, prison terms of between 4 and 20 years have been handed down to 15 members of the banned Falun Gong spiritual movement for hijacking state television broadcasts in China, Xinhua News Agency reported. Falun Gong followers were convicted by Changchun Intermediary People's Court in northeastern China's Jilin province of damaging radio and television property and of conspiring to use the outlaw group to undermine law enforcement in the Xinhua report said. State television broadcasts in the northeastern city of Changchun were interrupted on March 5th by footage of Falun Gong's U.S.-based leader, Li Hongzhi.
Z-H-I.
Yep.
Yeah, Li Hongzhi. That's his name. Also, Chongqing. I'm pretty sure you're saying Chongqing.
No, Changchun.
No? Changchun, okay.
I've been to Chongqing. This is definitely a different city.
Okay.
And a film accusing the government of staging the fiery deaths of alleged followers in the Tiananmen Square last year. The television takeover was one of the most defiant protests by members of the Falun Gong, whose once regular demonstrations in Tiananmen Square had diminished since a government crackdown arrested group leaders and sent thousands of followers to re-education camps. In June this year, state-run satellite signals were also hijacked during the Soccer World Cup finals and Falun Gong propaganda was aired. The hijacking was on a channel the Chinese government uses to beam TV to remote areas in China that have little access to outside news. I love that. Falun Gong, based on traditional Chinese religions and meditation exercises, acquired millions of followers in the mid-1900s before it was banned by Beijing in July 1999 and denounced as an evil cult. Since it was outlawed, thousands of members have been detained and activists based outside China claimed hundreds have died and been tortured while in custody. I'm gonna read one more just because that didn't fully summarize it as much as I wanted it to.
Okay.
This one is actually from a CBC channel who aired a documentary on it. And I just think it summarizes the whole situation of what happened a little bit better. Titled, In 2002, Falun Gong Activists Hacked Into a State TV Station in China, CBC Documentaries. In March 2002, activists from the outlawed spiritual movement Falun Gong hijacked a state TV station in Changchun, China. Their goal was to counter the government narrative aimed at suppressing their practice. In the after, I wonder if it is Chongqing. Is this is?
I know it's so close.
It's an English version of it, so it's not actually the Chinese spelling of it, and it's just Changchun. I wonder if it is. In the aftermath, police swept the city in search of the saboteurs. Hundreds of Falun Gong practitioners were detained and 15 were sentenced to prison terms of up to 20 years. Many faced torture and abuse and several died in prison. Many Falun Gong followers were forced to flee China. Internationally renowned illustrator and comic artist Dai Qiong, known for the Justice League and Star Wars franchises, was one of them. The documentary Eternal Spring retraces the events of the hijacking. Combining 3D animation using Dong Qing's art and present-day interviews, the film brings a life to the story of defiance and harrowing eyewitness accounts of prosecution. Dai Qiong discovered Falun Gong when he was 21. But Falun Gong teaches a simple, really, he says in the film. You cultivate your heart and improve your character, and that leads to better physical and mental health. We know about the Falun Gong. I'm going to skip over this because it's just telling you how great Falun Gong is, and we already know how great the Falun Gong is. They have the dancers.
They have such good dancers. If you want to become one, go to the compound.
In 2002, a small group of practitioners in Changchun devised a plan to hack into a state TV signal and play a video about Falun Gong's teachings. The goal of hijacking the TV was to set the record straight, one practitioner said in the film. If you're silent in the face of persecution and look away when people are dying, are you still human? Said another. Dai Qiong disagreed with the hijacking at the time. He believed it would worsen the violent repression of Falun Gong. In Eternal Spring, he speaks to some of the people who were directly involved and his views begin to change. Yeah, so I think that I just wanted to get out the fact of what this guy thought the hijacking was for. This is, I mean, the zombie one got some persecution. This one got a lot of persecution on it because it was already a group getting that was being
persecuted. And again, if you want to know more about the Falun Gong, more likely than not, you've listened to at least one of those episodes from us because that's our most popular episode. Yeah. But go listen to our three-part Falun Gong episode.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about this one. It never came up in our episodes. And from all the other ones that I have heard about it, I was like, wow, Falun Gong.
Yeah.
That'll be a nice surprise.
We had to keep it to a brief 3 1-hour episodes.
So, yeah.
We couldn't get everything.
And again, that ties it back to us to be able to tell you to go listen to one of our episodes. And you've probably listened to it because, again, it is our best episode.
By far. Like, not even close.
Voted by the people. Not by us, by the people. Probably.
Of China.
Maybe Falun Gong people.
Yeah. Although it's the one where we're not very nice to Falun Gong, so I don't think it is Falun Gong.
Anyhow, do you have anything else to say? Add?
No.
Comment.
Recent news came up on the Falun Gong, but I feel like that'll be for a different time that we'll talk about that.
Oh yeah, time of Falun Gong.
Yeah, it shows how much power they had at the time, though. They really did. As they were rising, or at least competing with the government, it shows how much power they had in that period of time.
Yeah, I guess, I mean,
which to is be just able like to take it over, so scary. But then
they got pretty highly persecuted after this hijacking.
Well, and even then, the question really is how persecuted they were.
That is a question.
Because the only party who tells us how persecuted they are is the Falun Gong.
Yeah, and now they're in other countries in which do not persecute.
Yes.
So here we are. And that has been it of our hijacking of your regularly scheduled podcast episode. Or not. Maybe you actually tuned in for this one.
I mean, we can just kind of wait and see if this one will get hijacked too.
Oh yeah,
because,
that would be so
like,
good.
It would be inevitable.
That would be but so I, perfect I don't, for
Popes,
someone to do.
Popes, is it going to happen? Nope. They say they have no idea what this technology is we're even using, so they have nothing to say. They're very confused in Latin.
If you're just tuning in now, I don't know where you're going to find the origination of that one with the popes. You're not going to have any idea, but now we got to have the
episode. Weirdly enough, it's not in the Pope episode that we just did either.
Nope. I can't even remember what episode, so that sucks.
I'm pretty sure it's the Ouija board episode.
Go listen to them all.
Yeah, go listen to them all. And then, again, just in case you missed some of them.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow, barring interruption, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. Yeah. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.